We've all heard the quote, with great power comes great responsibility. Responsibility is probably one of the first values that's instilled in us by parents and teachers in society. But many of us are probably finding ourselves shouldering a lot of responsibility, and not just in the workplace. So, how do we manage responsibilities outside of work in our families, friendships, and relationships? Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, where we share the underrepresented perspectives that shape our lifelong journey of learning and unlearning. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Tan. Thanks for joining us as we search for the right words or inspiration to start important conversations with ourselves and loved ones. Our episodes are released every Sunday, and if you've been listening for a while, we appreciate your support so much. If you want to get connected with us, you definitely want to give us a follow on Instagram and DM us.
All right, so let's set the context for this episode all about responsibility. I think, you know, Tan, you and I have known each other for 9 years, mm-hmm. and a through line and point of admiration in our friendship and also in how we've run this podcast for 4 years is that we are really responsible. Mm-hmm. We've discussed moments in the workplace where we witness women, especially women of color, taking on a lot of emotional labor and going above and beyond with the responsibilities that need to be carried out. And in episode 175, I mentioned how there's this phrase that I used to hear a lot, which is like, oh, if you try your best, then you'll have no regrets. And that actually led me to be fearful of letting myself be even an ounce less responsible than I could be and in the things that I pursue.
I do remember this conversation, and I remember I related so much because the stakes feel like they grow even bigger as I get older. But seeing as we've had a lot of conversations about our career, I began to think about my relationship to responsibility when it comes to family, friends, and just relationships outside of work in general. In some ways, I think it can feel a little bit messier and more complicated because there's more varied cultural context for each friendship and family relationship. So I want us to look into our thoughts on responsibility in families and friends and try to glean some lessons that we can learn from each other about how we go about managing responsibility and maybe in some instances, choosing to let go of responsibility. Mm. So I thought maybe just a change in pace with the context that we set for this episode, I thought maybe we can each share a story or two that best describes an example of responsibility that we take up in family. Do you want to go first, Sophia?
Yes, family, ooh, lots of responsibility. I would say the most prominent responsibility comes from me being the oldest sister. I have a brother who's 2 years younger and a sister who's 11 years younger. You know, as the oldest child, there are a lot of things that I experienced for the first time that my parents didn't know about and couldn't really help me with. And so now that I've gone through it and I've experienced a lot of ups and downs, I feel a lot of responsibility to do everything I can to set my sister up for success. For example, my parents and I had a lot of arguments about what kind of school she should go to. Should she be homeschooled? Should she go to her public school? Should she go to a religious school like I did? And that's a really big responsibility because my parents and I, this is the one thing that we do not see eye to eye on. And mm-hmm. we thought about this a lot. And we've actually thought about this for the last 4 or 5 years. And every time I would go home, I would kind of pick a fight with my parents because I wanted to do my best as a sister and make sure that they make a choice that sets my sister up for success. Because, mm-hmm. you know, where you go to high school, those are 4 really formative years that really help you, that really shape your sense of self and your belief in what you can do and who you can be. Mm. And after arguing with my parents so much, it was very exhausting and sad. I had a big learning, which is that there's actually a limit to what I can do. And I deserve to be more forgiving of myself because my sister is turning out to be a very resilient person and probably doesn't need every bit of protection and advocacy that I've convinced myself that I need to provide to her in order for me to consider myself as a responsible sister. Like, she knows that I've tried my best. And I know that she is probably more resilient than I am. And I may have had a bad time at a certain religious high school, but she can probably get through it better than I can. And even if she doesn't, it's not the end of the world. Like, she has me as an older sister and as someone she can turn to. And I didn't have an older sister at her age. So I think that realization was very freeing and helped me remove myself from this very burdensome responsibility.
Thank you so much for sharing. That is very, I'm sure that a lot of people who are older siblings can probably relate to what you just shared. And even as an only child myself, I feel like you are a first-time sister in much the same way your parents were first-time parents with you. Mm. And so I feel like some of the things that you're sharing remind me of the lessons I've heard parents learn about, you know, noticing that their child is actually like all grown up and can make a lot of decisions on their own too. And like they have a little bit more agency. And so that's really cool to hear from like the older sister perspective of your relationship with Ivana. And I'm sure she appreciates that you recognize that about her.
How about you? What sort of responsibility have you felt with family?
Yeah, so I was thinking of one example that's very explicit and another that's maybe a little bit more implicit and self-driven. So the explicit one is that growing up, I actually was allowed to not do that many chores, which is kind of, which I feel like was kind of taboo to talk about when I was a child because it would kind of be perceived as like me being very spoiled or privileged, which is true. Like I am very blessed that my parents told me to not worry about that. But the reason is because my parents said that my main responsibility was to be an excellent student so that I have a great career and I'm able to support them in the long-term future, like once I have a job. So
I think a lot of people have heard this.
Yeah, so this kind of created this false sense of idyllic adolescence in a way, because while I was free from other obligations, I've known from a young age that each result an accomplishment would be very closely monitored because it was going to be sort of like a litmus test for how well I will do in the long-term future to provide for them. And I don't have any excuses for failure because I'm not I'm not dividing my attention from my studies or from violin or anything like that. So that was one that I think was very impressed on me explicitly from my parents growing up. And then the second one was in episode 30, we actually talked about our experiences with bullying, how I went through a lot of bullying when I was in middle school and moved to this new school in California. And I remember during that time, my parents would ask me how school was. And that was the time when I made the conscious decision to not tell them anything about the bullying. Because one, it was to kind of shelter my parents from the hardship I was experiencing because they themselves were also adjusting to being in a new state, making their own new friends too, and they don't have like a go-to school like me to be making friends in. And then two, also like to not embarrass myself in front of them because I did want to seem like I was holding it together and being very responsible.
So oh my gosh, I relate to that so much. For me, it's for a slightly different reason, a third reason, which is that my parents were paying for me to go to religious school. And so I didn't like going, but I also didn't want to make them feel bad that they're paying for me to go to a school that I really dislike.
Yeah, there's a lot of like self-imposed responsibilities I'm hearing from the family side of things alongside the explicit ones. For friendships, one example that I can think of when it comes to responsibility that I take on in friendships is there was a time when I was leaving New York City and moving to California, and there was one friend who I kind of let our plans go to the wayside just because life kind of gets in the way and moving is a really big deal. Like it takes up a lot of mental energy and also time. And she found out that I was actually leaving like that day. And she was really upset with me because I had been quote unquote planning to leave without seeing her. And so I think since then even before then, I had kind of taken up this responsibility to make sure that people feel appreciated and loved during my time that I am physically close to them. So whether it's during college or I'm visiting a city like on a trip just for fun, I'm always thinking of all the people that live in that city and trying to find a way to make sure that they feel appreciated in some way, whether it's like letting them know that I am in the city but won't have time to see them, but I would love to see them next time, or explicitly making plans to see them, even if I'm like dead exhausted and busy. So I try to be a friend who is able to remind them that I do appreciate them, even if it's been like so long since I've caught up with them and they we just like don't have a lot to relate on.
Yeah, I feel that pressure too. And actually, sometimes when I go home to the Bay Area, I have a lot of friends who are there, but I know that I won't have the energy to see everyone. And so I tell my closest friends, like, I'm in incognito mode. Don't tell people, don't post pictures of me being there. I don't want anyone to know and feel like I'm intentionally avoiding them.
That actually is really similar to a responsibility that I feel kind of burdened to take on in family, which is actually when I go to Korea, I kind of have to do the outreach and meeting up with the extended family members, because it's been like years since I've seen them, and like I should be making an effort to like have close ties with them, because I am all the way on the other side of the world. And that is something that I feel very burdened about. And I've also had to tell my parents, like, hey, don't tell anyone in our family that I'm here, because I just want to do my own thing and eat all the food that I want to. What are some other responsibilities that you feel particularly burdened to take on?
Yeah. Another one has to do with the words of affirmation that I share, whether it's like if at the end of the school year and writing a yearbook message to people. I put a lot of pressure on myself. Like throughout the year, I will be planning what I write in my friends' yearbooks at the end of the year. Like I took it so seriously. Like I wanted to be that person who can remember all the small moments and bring them out in a funny way in their yearbook as I signed it. And it also applies to birthday messages as well, writing birthday cards. And there are times when my friends would share good news with me, or, you know, tell me that it's their birthday. And I just sometimes don't respond, just because I'm such a perfectionist about sharing words in response. And that has actually led to friendships being strained, because people think that I don't care about them. Where in reality, it's that I'm just too much a perfectionist with my words that I don't end up saying anything.
That's something that people, if they didn't think to ask, they would not know like what's going on in your head. And it's actually that whatever action you've taken or not taken is actually more a reflection of you than of what you actually think of the person,
of them.
What are some responsibilities that you feel empowered to uphold? Because I think that oftentimes responsibility is thought of as a burden, but I think there are probably responsibilities that we are more than happy to step up to the plate to do. So what are some responsibilities you do feel empowered?
Yeah, I think responsibilities can feel really empowering, because it's like a role or a gift that you're able to offer and you're willing to offer up. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that has been supporting friends with their applications and with their career. Like even if in college, many of my friends, for their summer internships or for med school or law school or grad school fellowships, they have to write essays to get in. And I love reading people's essays and helping them polish the essays and think about how to find words that let themselves shine, because I just believe in my friends so much. So yeah, even if like a distant friend reached out to me and asked me to read their essay, I would do it. I think it's so fun.
I have been very supported by you on many applications that I've written. So I really, really appreciate all that. This is something that you feel really excited to do.
Yes. I think for you never have to worry about burdening me. Like you can always send me an application.
Okay. Everyone heard that right now in this podcast. Just wait. You're going to get an influx of people asking about applications they're writing. But be mindful of Sophia's capacity. Yeah. I think with friends, I feel really empowered to schedule hangouts. So following up with them. So if the conversation has already been initiated, I just kind of, I don't really like looking back at a chat with someone if I think of them out of the blue and I just want to message them, and seeing the history and how we kind of let the plans go away. And so I like to follow up as much as I can to schedule hangouts, whether it's like deciding a time, offering some openings in my schedule, or offering up some options of places we can meet at. I also enjoy it because I feel like I am very influenced by food a lot of the time, and a lot of these hangouts happen around food. And I like to think of restaurants or food places that I would like to try or like to revisit. And I feel empowered in that way to introduce someone or reminisce over the food as well with the person.
That's so funny. I can see that come out in our podcasting 100%. You are like, every time you're like, what about this idea? I'm like, oh, that sounds good. You're like, okay, I'm scheduling it right now. And I'm just like, wow, you're so like on top of it. And so like your follow through is so good. And that I think that's something that your friends must really appreciate, because for me, on the flip side, that's actually a responsibility that I don't feel very empowered by. Like I really don't like scheduling things and like having that back and forth with someone. So I don't like that's a responsibility that feels burdensome to me.
Okay. Well, I hope you know that whenever I do follow up, I'm not thinking like, oh, like we weren't able to schedule this yet. Like what's taking
Sophia,
so long?
Sophia, let this ball drop.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not like that at all. It's more
that
of,
is very good to know.
Okay. Yeah. And if I'm following up, I'm not trying to be very persistent about it necessarily, but it's just like, hey, like if it's not the right time, then we can talk about how it's not the right time right now. And close the chapter there rather than just leave the thread hanging loose. Like, I don't really love seeing that in text form, because that's just evidence for me to see how we haven't been able to follow up on this, on the hangout, and connect in a deeper way. Well, from there, I think we can kind of go into some tips that we have for folks around responsibility. So when it comes to managing responsibilities, whether it's imposed by other people or self-imposed, tip number one should be taking some time to understand the motivation behind the responsibility or even the love language, especially if this is someone coming from someone. So first off, for motivation, I feel like sometimes you don't always know what the underlying reason is behind a responsibility. So for example, maybe the responsibility is about promoting a value that your family wants to uphold. So maybe being on time to things is actually the value of showing up for other people and showing up in a timely manner and showing and making sure people know that I respect their time. Maybe just understanding that can help you brainstorm even alternatives of how you can uphold that responsibility, that motivation in a different type of responsibility. And as for love language, maybe it's, as an example, maybe it's the way that they feel appreciated and taken care of is different from your interpretation. Or maybe there are other ways to elicit that feeling. So for example, if you feel like you need to be responsible in scheduling these hangouts, then maybe the love language that one person feels is actually that, oh, like I actually just really need to hear words of affirmation instead of like quality time. Like maybe the outreach was done because a time and place to meet is actually a time to receive words of affirmation and offer them up, but maybe that's actually can be done over text or online in some form. So I think sometimes understanding that love language, which I guess can also be considered like a communication style, can at least illuminate the why behind the responsibility, which either would make you more empowered to take on that responsibility or kick off some new ideas of how that responsibility can kind of be morphed.
Those are really good. Okay. The second tip about how to manage and even let go of or prioritize responsibility is reflecting on, where does this responsibility come from? Am I making an assumption about someone else's needs and wants? Or is it coming from my own ego? Like, you know, me wanting to come off as someone who is very eloquent or very good at giving words of affirmation, or is it from something else? And I think identifying the source of this responsibility can really help you further reflect on, like, if this is something that you actually care about.
I think it can also help you figure out where to direct the conversation or the reflection to. So because if it's an assumption of someone else, maybe you can ask that person to and have a conversation with them about this responsibility that you perceive someone is giving to you.
Mm-hmm.
What about tip number three?
Yes, tip number three is thinking about, how happy would I be if I fulfill this responsibility? I think it's so easy just to be on autopilot, to feel a responsibility and to work towards it. But it helps to stop and think about, like, is this, like, if I actually fulfilled this, if I met my goal, does that actually make me happy?
I think that's really important, because responsibilities often are things that repeat over time. And so just because you finished, it's not like quite like work where you finish like one project and this responsibility you have taken on is going, you're not going to have to do that later on. Sometimes with family and friends, like that's just a cycle. Like you schedule hangouts all the time with different types of friends at different points in your relationship, or with family, like you do chores all the time. Like what, then that happens weekly. So I think figuring out how you feel about this responsibility when it comes to completion at one point can help you reflect on how often are you going to feel happy or feel this type of way when you fulfill the responsibility. I have tip number four, which is actually writing out your list of responsibilities. So this is kind of similar to our episodes about stress and motivation, but first write down your list of priorities and figure out which is of highest priority. I think seeing it laid out on paper can help you determine how to tackle the responsibilities, like tackling the highest of priorities first, or maybe even letting go of some, because in the grand scheme of things, maybe this responsibility that your parents have placed upon you is actually like not as important to them compared to this higher priority one. So maybe they would actually be okay with you letting go of some of the smaller responsibilities.
Yeah, that's good. And even inviting other people to weigh in on those responsibilities instead of you just assuming what is the most important to them. That's really good. Okay, this is all great, but sometimes family and friendships are very messy, and not everyone has the capacity to hold these safe spaces and have a very level-headed, compassionate conversation about responsibility. there are some times when there are responsibilities that are so big that when I even try to envision having a conversation about it, I imagine it's going to be a pretty reactive and like hot-headed conversation. So how do we handle those situations?
Tip number 5 is experiment with the 5 approaches to ethical decision making. So this is actually something I learned from my ethics class in film school.
Oh.
So I see this as kind of like an interesting exercise because there's so many ways you can approach a decision, but this kind of gives you frameworks to go off of, and you may end up with very different decisions that you wouldn't have thought of without these frameworks. So I'll break them down for you. So the first one is utilitarian. So the utilitarian approach reassesses an action in terms of its consequences or outcomes. So the net benefits and costs to all the stakeholders on an individual level. So your goal with the utilitarian approach is to achieve the greatest good for the greatest number while creating the least amount of harm or preventing the greatest amount of suffering. So this is like, if you can just imagine, like it's a very calculated approach, like how happy is someone going to be or how upset are they going to be? And kind of like, you can even like put numbers next to those two and just see like how that comes out to. It's kind of like making a pros and cons list and putting weights on and priorities to those attributes of the pros and cons list. The second one is common good. The common good approach regards all individuals as part of a larger community. So because of this, we share certain common conditions and institutions. And for society to thrive, we need to safeguard the sustainability of our community for the good of all, so including our weakest and most vulnerable members. So this is the one where you may find people making a lot of sacrifices in their actions because they want to uplift someone else because it's better for all of society. So that's another approach that can be used. Virtue is a third approach, which is turning our attention to the elements of individual character and disposition, which deepen our humanity and engender our relationships with others. So another way you could think of this is, how would I act in this situation if I were my higher self? Like if I could remove myself from the situation and think of the best type of person I want to be, what kind of decision would I make? So that's another way you could frame that. The fourth one is fairness. The fairness approach, it focuses on obviously being fair and equitable in the distribution of good and harm and or the social benefits and social costs. And so you can kind of imagine this as like a store owner, like even if they have a friend who's coming by to get something from the store, they wouldn't give that person a discount, a family and friends discount. Everyone's going to have to pay equally. So that is another way you could kind of frame this decision making as, okay, so if I have this much responsibility, but other people in my family don't have as much responsibility, that's not fair. So how can I go about redistributing that responsibility so that's a little bit fairer across the board? And the last one is the rights approach, which focuses on respect for human dignity. And this holds that our dignity is based on our ability to choose freely how we live our lives and that we have a moral right to respect our choices as free, equal, and rational. So this one has to do with your moral compass and what is okay or not okay for someone to take on. And so this can have to do with like, oh, again, a lot of these can be conflated with each other, but I think just breaking down these frameworks can help you maybe approach the situation from a different angle. Or if you happen to see that it leads you to the same types of decisions, maybe that's just extra information for you to know that, oh, I actually would still choose to uphold this responsibility because of X, Y, Z values or approaches that I've tried out. What do you think of these frameworks?
Yeah, they're very interesting and I can see how they conflict. Because like, for example, fairness and utilitarian can very easily conflict. Sometimes maybe fudging the rules a little bit or giving someone an advantage can maximize happiness across the board, but it's unfair. So it's very interesting.
Yeah. So that's the 5th tip. And then that leads us into tip number 6, where if you happen to be feeling reactive, I encourage you to step away for at least 10 minutes and either journal what you would have said or what would have liked to say, or share with another loved one what you plan on saying in this conversation. I think getting another perspective, especially when it comes to family and friends, where it can feel really subjective and in the heat of the moment, can either, one, validate your feelings and that your words would be actually received with the intent you hope to convey, or two, they can help you get closer to what you want to get out of the situation. Mm. I'm sure we all have had times when, like, we share, like, an email that we want to, a salty email we want to send a manager, and we just want to double check, do I actually sound that salty? And a lot, sometimes people might say, you don't sound salty at all, or they'd be like, I caution you from sending that email. Let's reword a couple of things. Yeah. So I think just doing this exercise, either by journaling or by talking with a loved one, can be really effective to help you feel empowered to start up those conversations.
Yeah, that's really good. Like, this is so relevant in work, because there are times when you might be having so much on your plate and you need to have a hard conversation with someone and request that they take on the responsibility that is rightfully theirs, so that you no longer have to shoulder so much. So that's a good one.
And then our last tip, which is tip number 7, is phrasing this statement when you choose to have the conversation as the intention leading into the current feelings about the responsibility you're taking on, and ending with, let's try blank. So the intention is important because it signals to the other person that you actually have a common goal. So this is what Sophia tends to refer to as win-win situations. You want to be on the same page about where you would like to go with this responsibility. Two, the current feelings about responsibility at least give you a chance to validate the responsibility. But by starting off with the intention, it sets up the other person to understand where you're coming from when you talk about these current feelings. And then by saying, let's try blank, it also allows them to see this letting go of the responsibility as one that you want to try out. And so I just want to remind people, actually, that even the responsibilities you feel empowered to take on, it can change. Like, you might not feel as empowered later on, and you're allowed to change your mind. So just clearing the air by having this framework of this sentence and seeing if there's any room for adjustment can also put your mind at ease of how you want to tackle these responsibilities.
Yeah, I really like let's try, because it's pretty much asking, are you open to doing this at least once? Which is like very easy to say yes to, rather than like, let's do this, which is like, oh my gosh, sounds like a big commitment.
Yeah, because I think about with parents who maybe like want their kids to do chores, it sometimes feels like they've got a stronghold on this belief that like this chore has to be done. But let's just try not doing the chore for 1 week. Like, is it really the end of the world? And maybe they'll realize that it's actually okay to let go of it. Or they'll realize that maybe it didn't make them feel good in some way, and so they'll bring that up to you. Like, hey, like, I still didn't really like that you did do the chore. Let's figure. And then from there, you can go about finding a win-win situation where that chore can be done, but maybe you don't feel like you're taking on so much responsibility.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, these were such great tips. And I love that you were able to bring in what you learned from your ethics class.
Yes.
So this episode touched on so many themes: responsibility, making requests of others, having potentially hard conversations, reflecting on your goals and why you care about those goals. And if you enjoyed this episode, there are a ton of other episodes you might enjoy as well, and I would love to share them with you. One episode is 180, Options for Tactfully Saying No. As you can see, very relevant to this episode. And we give you ways to say no in a way that doesn't come off as very threatening or aggressive, which I think a lot of people can use these tips. Another episode is 175, Discovering Negative Self-Talk and Hidden Talents. And then we have a couple episodes that are very related to responsibility with family. And it's 126, Expectations of a Lifelong Caregiver, and episode 113 about the film Happy Cleaners, Surviving Crisis and Heartaches as a Family.
And then we also have friendship-specific episodes, because we are a podcast that are two friends right now, so we talk a lot about friendships. So the first one would be episode 149, Deepening Friendships as a Creator, and episode 132, Thriving Friendships in Your 30s, featuring two horny goats who are also a pair of really great friends. And then lastly, the last category is relationship-specific episodes. We didn't talk about romantic relationships as much in this episode, but a lot of these tips probably still apply in whatever relationships you're in. So we want to encourage you to take a listen to episode 168, Exploring the Expectations, Hopes, and Surprises of Our Relationship, featuring Kevin. So this is an episode of Sophia and Kevin, and they talk a little bit more about expectations that they've held and been surprised by in their relationship. And episode 39, On Entrepreneurship, Authenticity, and Powerful Partnership, Tubby Nugget, featuring our good friends Janine and Josh. And they talk about how the lines between business partnership and relationships can get very blurred, and how they go about navigating those conversations.
Such great episodes to follow up on. So if you enjoyed this episode, Would recommend for you to check out these other episodes as well, and they are linked in the episode description below. And if you've been a longtime listener and you would like to support us financially, there's also a link to treat us to a coffee or a boba through Buy Me a Coffee. We share new episodes every Sunday, so share this with a friend and let them know that you all can look forward to our next episode next Sunday. Bye!